Welcome to the Genius Network Show. In this episode of the interview, you'll learn unique methods to build a huge following with J.P. Sears and Joe Polish. J.P. is one of the featured experts at the next Genius Network annual event and is the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual. He helps people heal, eliminate self-sabotage, and live more meaningful lives using a unique approach blended with comedy and seriousness. If you would like access to the full episode, the show notes, and the special resources for this episode, please visit geniusnetwork.com/33. That's geniusnetwork.com/33.
Okay, I'm here with J.P. Sears, the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a half steps to spiritual superiority. You all have a copy of this book, those of you that are here in the room. A quick bio on J.P. And I'm not sure any of this is true, but I'm going to read it anyway because it says it right here. J.P. Sears is an emotional healing coach, YouTuber, author, international teacher, speaker at events, world traveler, and curious student of life. His work empowers people to live more meaningful lives. J.P. is the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual. Sounds true. Published this. Release date was March 7th of this year. He's very active with his online videos. Active could be interpreted in many different ways, where he encourages healing and growth through his humorous and entertainingly informative videos, including his hit Ultra Spiritual comedy series, which has accumulated well over 100 million views, maybe more. So it's great to have you here.
Yay, yeah, thank you.
Seriously,
Joe.
Yeah. JP's a great guy.
I deserve better than that, but that's okay. Low energy.
Right, yeah. Yeah, seriously, come on, guys. I want to give a shout out to JJ Virgin. JJ's the one that introduced us, and she's awesome. She's been a Genius member for a few years. And so, background: how do you do what you do? Where did this all start? And I want to get to not just the interesting things of how you started it, but how you actually have been building this following, because I really see you on the cusp of getting ready to just massively explode, although you've already, most people know who you are, you're very recognized. So how'd this all start?
Yeah, well, I guess the first 13 years of my career, it took me, well, that long to build like a 2,000 person following. And then the last 2.5 years, it's become, I don't know, like 1.6 million person following. So there's, you know, been quite an exponential growth curve. And yeah. Getting to the heart of the matter, one, I want to acknowledge, like, those 13 years were really important. We all know the old saying, like, an overnight success is just an illusion. Like, what's happened, like, the 10, 20, 30 years before that overnight success? So that's a part of it. And then for me, I think a big part is the more I give myself permission to just freaking be me and not apologize for who I am, not try to be what I think other people want me to be or what's going to get me the low-grade currency of just approval, but the more I just step into the miracle of who I am and be as authentic as I am, the more it just works for me. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, I accidentally get successful when I do this thing called be true to myself. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I didn't know any better, it's like life is conspiring for us. When we're working against ourselves, it's like life works against us. But I think when I'm being true to myself, it's like life validates that. It's saying, yes, you're going in the direction of you, so here's lots of support. And when you're going in the opposite direction of you, we're going to take freaking support away. You might call it a curse, but we'll call it a blessing. And to me, it's kind of like if you're in your car and your GPS, you know, you're going in the opposite direction of your intended destination, and your car started to like lower its RPMs when you're going in the opposite direction, and it gradually starts to shut down. You'd say, this fucking car, what the hell's wrong with it? But after a few years, you might start to realize this is actually my friend. Mm-hmm. It's shutting down. It's taking energy away when I'm violating my true north. So long story short, and I know I sound a little bit abstract at this point, a little bit ultra spiritual, but I'm entitled. I have been finding authenticity always wins out. And I know authenticity present day, it's very much a buzzword. It's like a really easy concept to say. But I think it's really a journey of perpetual discovery. And I think authenticity, who I am, who you really are, who you guys really are, you are a mystery beyond your comprehension. So I think when we discover our authentic self, tomorrow we've got to divorce that authentic self, because I think we're always bigger than what we think we are. So with that said, being as authentic as I can and being willing to change, it seemingly works for me. What are we talking about, building my audience?
Yeah. Okay. I would love to. Like, what
just
did you
pretending
do?
I have a point here.
Right.
Just getting on my rant, like, what do I need to hear myself say, and I'll pretend it's in your benefit?
I love that. Yeah, well, like, so I've spent a little bit about talking about you. Let's have you talk about you.
Yeah. Yes. What do you like best about me, Joe? Yeah.
The hair and the purple shirt.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
There's a lot of white people here.
There are. We have a black guy in the back. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. We do.
So one Caucasianly impaired guy.
Yeah. And Akira, you know, who's Asian, just to represent.
That's,
you
know, good. That's good.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. I should. I mean, if you just look around, they start popping up.
So, could I throw something else out there?
Absolutely.
I'm curious with you guys. Y'all have businesses, but I'm curious. Who has a business where it's like your personal brand is either your business or it's a big part of it? Cool. So some of you. So what I'm going to say for the rest of you is probably absolutely useless. What I've found, maybe to state the obvious, but I think it seems to be a significant trend out there today, video is a very powerful way to reach a lot of people. It's just something people are paying a lot of attention to. And that's probably got a life cycle. It's just like 2017. People are paying attention to a lot of videos. And I've built my audience. I haven't done any marketing. I haven't done any Facebook ads until my book came out. Then I did a little bit. So I've been able to build my audience simply through getting people to click the share button on videos. And that's very valuable and very free. And so I've done my best to pay attention to what gets people to click the share button, specifically on videos, maybe other stuff, but definitely on videos. So I hope it can be of value to you, what I've learned. So here's three things that I've noticed about giving people value through video. I think there needs to be one of these three components, preferably two, even better, three. One would be there needs to be inspiration in the video. People leave feeling inspired. Number two would be entertainment. Comedy could be entertainment. Usually you letting your personality come out is entertaining as well. Many forms of entertainment. Three would be awareness. I think one of the most fundamental cravings inside of all people that they don't know how to say they desire is self-awareness. I think it's something that perpetuates our life. I think one of the reasons why life takes so long is we all crave self-awareness, and it just takes a while to get that. So with that said, inspiration, entertainment, and awareness. A video you're creating, does it have at least one of those? If it doesn't, then my guess is it's not very valuable to the viewer. I think viewers want to share something that's valuable to them because they think this might be valuable for my friends and family. If it's valuable to you, but not them, they won't click share. So I've had, I think my most shared video, if meat eaters acted like vegans, it had over a million shares. That's not a million views, but it's a million shares. And I think a lot of times when we get into a marketing mindset, we're really basically saying, like, how can I get the most value? But we also realize when we start thinking paradoxically, the way to get the most value is to give the most value. not with the agenda of let me give the most value so I can actually get the most value. No, that's actually like pretend giving just to get. But if we make sure we're inspiring people, entertaining them, or raising awareness, and there's infinite ways to do that, then I think it really perpetuates how many people will become your best advertisers by clicking share. If that makes a little bit of sense.
Can I ask you a question?
Could you explain share?
Oh yeah, so on Facebook or YouTube, there's literally a share button. And you, Facebook's a thing, by the way, Joel. Do you have a computer?
Well, I know what the share is, but I don't know what happens. So what?
So let's say you watch a video of mine on Facebook, and you say, oh, I like that video. It tickled me somehow inside. So you click share. Now that video is distributed to essentially everybody on Facebook who's friends with you.
Yeah, but I'm watching on YouTube.
Yeah, so there's a share button on YouTube as well. The distribution's just not as high because there's not as many people on YouTube as Facebook.
So who is getting that share? You said you went from 200 to 1.6 million through sharing.
Yeah. So I don't know everybody's name. Well, all joking aside, there a lot of us might be aware of this, but because the shareability on YouTube is clunky, because a lot of us would say, I didn't know you could share on YouTube. So about a year ago, I broke out of the dogma of being a YouTube purist. I was only uploading videos to YouTube. I don't know why. I had just brainwashed myself into thinking like that made me a better person. So I wasn't uploading videos natively to Facebook. I would just share the YouTube link on Facebook, and Facebook algorithms have it that not many people are going to get that, very small organic reach. So then for the, you know, 100th time, you know, some of my mentors were saying, JP, upload it natively to Facebook, you idiot. So I was, okay, why don't I try that? So native videos on Facebook have way better share capacity simply because the share function on Facebook is so easy. It's so seamless. Whereas YouTube, it's just harder to get stuff to go viral and get good reach because it's not an incredibly shareable community. There's less people on YouTube as well, but also the share, it's like you have to go through a labyrinth, basically. So I love how you brought that up.
Yeah. Does that help?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We'll go Gordy, and then we'll go.
I think we're doing a Q&A at this
point. Yeah, it appears.
Yeah, so when I was 15, I was bit by a spider. And my uncle told me, JP, with great power comes great responsibility. Uncle Ben. He got shot, so his advice useless. Does that answer your question? So the other part of it, one of the things I love about superheroes is it's modern day mythology. There's so much we can learn about our undiscovered life, paying attention to mythology, which oftentimes is paying attention to superheroes. So there's always great pain, great wounding, great trauma that creates the superhero. And there's usually an unresolved shadow that drives the superhero that will destroy the superhero if the superhero doesn't start to self-realize. And with that said, shame, insignificance was my pain as a child. And I didn't know how to deal with that, so I dealt with it by not dealing with it. I would perpetually try to escape my inner sense of insignificance by making people laugh. Because if I could get mom or dad or my teachers, my classmates, my friends to laugh for about 3 minutes, I would feel significant. I felt like I mattered to them. And because it only lasted 3 minutes, it meant I had to do it again real fast. Which, you know, kind of the outliers, 10,000 hours worth of stuff. I got a lot of repetitions doing it because I was trying to fill myself up and satisfy myself in an inherently insatiable way while also essentially losing myself. But great pain can become a great strength. So with, I think, a lot of self-work, and I've been doing a lot of self-work for the past 15 years, it's made me really humble, to the point where I'm the most humble person I know. So now my humor that was once upon a time as a child meant to escape myself and cover up pain, now my humor, at least what I hope and what I intend, the humor is meant to transform pain, expose pain, and help me find myself and help other people find themselves. I find, particularly for me, it's part of my authenticity. Humor is a language of connection. There, you know, I was doing YouTube videos for, I think, 3.5 years, maybe 2.5 years, before I did my first comedy video. And it's like awesome, like I might get 100 views on a video, and that's awesome. And not to sound arrogant, but I will. But I was sharing really valuable stuff, just from a sincere perspective. And then when I started speaking essentially those same perspectives through the language of humor, now all of a sudden, instead of 100 people watching a video, it's, you know, millions oftentimes watching a video. So with that said, I think my sort of superhero avatar was certainly pain, but pain that I brought consciousness to. And now I think that pain actually works for me, and I hope it also works for the world and serves the world. P.S. on that, let's just pretend like we're talking to you guys so you believe you're getting benefit out of this. You're odd enough that you're an entrepreneur. And I would ask you to make an assumption for just a second. It might not be true for you, but just make an assumption. What if once upon a time you decided to become an entrepreneur, start your business, because that was your way of unconsciously escaping your inner sense of insignificance? So let's just pretend you're a human being and you do that. Not saying that's the only reason why you're in your business, but let's just pretend it's one of the reasons. So my question for you is, if you have unresolved pain that is driving you to great success, and that same pain will drive you to destroy yourself if you don't bring consciousness to it, then my question for you is, what is that pain? And I'd ask you to really sit with that question. Because it's not a pain that's going to be conscious, or else you would have already dealt with it. You've probably dealt with a lot of pain in your life. That's the conscious stuff you're aware of. But what unconsciously inside of you has been driving you that will eventually destroy you? Just like Batman loses his sanity in the last Batman movie because he's not bringing consciousness to his deep pain of losing his parents. So what's your version of that? You know, I know we all sit in here wearing our business casual stuff and pretend we're business people, but I call bullshit. Underneath your business casual, you're just a bunch of naked weirdos. And I forget who the wise sage was that said it, but here's the quote. We all shit out of our assholes. Was it Confucius? I thought it was Mother Teresa. But the reason why I say that, by the way, I would write that down, because it's true. Actually, I had a lady in a retreat in Costa Rica. She lifted up her shirt, and she had a colostomy bag. She's like, oh, JP, that's not true. Yeah. So there's a reason why I say that. A lot of times we like to pretend that we're put together people. And you guys are very functional people. I mean, probably like top 1%. And you're also a human being. You still have your challenges, no matter how unconscious they are. You have your disgusting flaws. We all go to the bathroom, but we pretend like we don't. We go in, we close the door, we wipe away the evidence and flush away the evidence that we ever did this disgusting thing. Then we come out looking all prim and proper. But getting real, I think some of our greatest potential lies in looking the shit rings that are still around our psychological assholes. I think we can get about 45 minutes more out of this analogy.
I'm hoping, seriously, yeah, no.
So,
I can see many 10-minute talks here.
And one of the things I loved about your talk earlier, Sean, you differentiated between business and personal lives. And I love how you differentiated between those because they're the same thing, but we just sometimes pretend that we're business people and forget our personal life. But we're all people who run businesses. So I do think what happens in our personal life is principally the driving force of what's happening in our business life. Maybe our business life is just a symptom of what's happening beneath the surface of primarily our heart. That's why I do believe when we're willing to get vulnerable and look at our unresolved challenges, we get the potential to step deeper into our superhero archetype rather than having it work against us.
Yeah.
I've watched your videos for a couple of years and had a good laugh. I've been surprised in my conversations with you today to learn how a lot of the things that you make fun of in your videos, you actually believe in your, you know, life, and that's actually kind of your background. And so your success started to come when you started making fun of the things you care about most. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that shift. Like, what's it like to make fun of the things that you actually care deeply about, but that's also where your impact comes from? I'm just curious about that.
I love the question. If you couldn't hear him in the back, he asked me, Deacon, how do you get so handsome? Joel, public speaking, you should always repeat questions. You know what I'm saying? So making fun of stuff in videos, the term I would use, just my delusional bias term, would be I play with things in videos. I think making fun of something has a negative connotation, which basically means I'm shaming it. I'm bullying it. And that's not where I like to come from. In fact, the only reason why I do videos on things that are important to me is I don't want to come from a condescending place or a judgmental energy. Like, I think I could do a great video on Scientology, but like, I don't feel a lot of respect for that cult. So I don't want to put out just like get a lot of cheap laughs. I think I could get a lot of views, but that would be coming from like a negative place, and I wouldn't want that. So Oscar Wilde once said something along the lines of, life is too important to take seriously. And Buddha allegedly said, I mean, he says whatever you want him to say, let's face it. His copyright attorneys are not that on the ball. So Buddha allegedly preached non-attachment. If you want peace of mind, contentment, genuine happiness, not gratification, but genuine happiness, aim for non-attachment. And to me, figuring out how to laugh at and be playful with what's most important to me, that's all an act of non-attachment. Learning how not to take myself so seriously, learning how to take my beliefs that I believe, and I stop believing my beliefs. I still have the beliefs, I just don't believe my beliefs anymore. I'm not as attached to them. I'm much more open to what's beyond my beliefs. I think our beliefs create a wonderful sense of certainty that does nothing but make us feel safe while we sit in the coffin of our comfort zone, really attached to what's suffocating us the most. So I think when we can learn to go beyond our beliefs, we're making friends with what's on the other side of our comfort zone rather than just being loyal to what's in our comfort zone. And I'm a firm believer, I think it was Alan Watts who said something along the lines of, nothing is as it seems, nor is it otherwise. So when I look at my beliefs about anything, and when you look at your beliefs about anything, what if your beliefs have no correlation to the way things are? And your beliefs are only correlated to what you believe. They don't necessarily have any root in reality. Would you want to be attached to something that's completely untrue? Or would you rather be unattached? Have it, but be unattached.
And on that note, what Sean is telepathically asking me to share with you guys
is the best way to find out what you need to learn how to laugh about the most is what offends you the most. I think when we get offended, we become connoisseurs of outrage. We want to get angry at someone because we don't know how to deal with the insecurity that just got triggered in us. And I believe the insecurity that just got triggered in us is one of our greatest potentials for growth, psychologically, maybe business-wise. So if we embrace the insecurity, what if it's one of our greatest sources of growth? And what if we avoid our insecurity? What if that's going to be one of our strongest forces of self-diminishment? So look at who offends you and ask, what does that say about me? What if how I feel about Donald Trump has zero to do with Donald Trump and everything about my undiscovered self that I'm projecting onto Donald Trump? What are my hidden insecurities that I'm so insecure about, I keep below my conscious surface, so I have to project them out? But I think a wise man like Sean would basically tell you, become secure with your insecurities rather than be insecure about your insecurities, if that makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, the character for me has been a great source of growth. Growing in audience, other kinds of growth too. And now just being the character is a limitation because I think I'm bigger than the character. And
it sounds ultra spiritual for a second. I think the message that wants to come through me is bigger than just the character. So there's maybe about 150 videos on my YouTube channel that are not comedy. So I've got like this side of me on my YouTube channel. The past year, I haven't been making many of the sincere videos just because I've had my hands full with the comedy. And my perspective is the same as yours. The real purpose of my heart and soul when it comes to my professional front is to help people help themselves live more meaningful lives and encourage them to unapologetically be the freaking selves. So with that said, comedy is a great way to get people's attention, to hopefully get them to pay attention to a deeper message, be it the deeper messages that are delivered with the comedy and or the deeper messages from just more my sincere offerings or deeper messages that other people speak. I really don't care if people just listen to me. I hope they don't, or else that means I'm a cult leader. Your cult, by the way, is awesome.
Yes,
I love this,
Joe. It is. I agree. I'll
say this too. Like when I first got introduced to you, I watched an interview. I can't remember her name. You were like messing with her dog or whatever. The dog was there the whole time, and you were talking about addiction. It was an interview on addiction, and I was like, "Wow, this guy like really knows his shit when it comes to." And then when I, you know, first talked to him, you know, it made me realize this is a guy who genuinely has been out there for many years teaching people that are suffering, on helping people. And the whole humor thing, which, I mean, look, if you've got a skill and you can develop it, I mean, why the hell not? And plus, humor brings a lot of relief to pain. You know, that's why you see some of the funniest people, some of the best comedians have committed suicide, mired in addiction, manic depression, lots of anxiety. So there's, and the humor is a way to soothe. It is, and it brings relief to difficulties. And so with the way that, I mean, you wouldn't use these, at least I don't think you'd use these words, but who am I to assume what you would do? Is, you know, you sell people what they want, you give them what they need. That's the whole thing. And I think that we all need to, because it takes enormous amounts of persuasion to get people to do the things they want to do, let alone look at the things they don't want to. So, you know, however you can set it up in order to do that, all the better. And I think you're doing a masterful job, and you don't have millions of people pay attention to you if you're not doing something that is creating that attraction. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Well, one of the things that I know you intuitively know, but in speaking, one of the things that humor does And you've seen it in my presentation, in Jim's presentation, and in Chris's presentation. Humor energizes the audience and opens their thinking to new ideas. Mm. And that's why we use humor in speaking. To energize them, but really to open their thinking to new ideas. And that's why, by using the humor and having such a deep message, combining those two becomes the ultimate delivery system, as opposed to just a humorist. And that's not what you are. But you use humor to, like Joe, you know, Joe uses the term, sell them what they want and give them what they need. But that's where the humor comes in.
Eric mentioned he heard about me from a friend who originally had just sent me a message on my Facebook page. I responded to him via just a video message. In the strategy. Do I have a strategy? I'm the most unstrategic person I know. I really like to function like Forrest Gump, where I don't like to make decisions based on what I think. I like to just be in the moment. Like I wrote a book about myself called How to Be Ultra. Could you be any more grounded, JP? I just like to be in the moment. Seemingly, that works for me. So there's times where I legitimately have time to sit down for 20 minutes and look at some Facebook messages. And I find it's quicker for me to respond to people, and it impacts them more if I just do a video message. 15-second message, it means a lot to people. And it's quicker for me. And then it's probably been at least a month since I've had any time to do that. So my strategy is strategylessness.
Yeah. We'll take a couple more, then we need to wrap. So
from a spiritual perspective, who would win in a fist fight, you or Eckhart Tolle?
Well, you said his name wrong.
Oh, sorry.
Eckhart? Eckhart. I think he'd be offended. It's a good question. You know, the fact he looks so weak and frail, kind of like he needs to not be so vegetarian, it makes me scared of him. It's like, what's he hiding inside? So I think he'd kick my ass for sure. Does that answer your question? From 2007 to 2013, I had been doing some basically independent contracting teaching for a holistic health institute. Travel around the world, teach workshops, and I was getting a lot of one-on-one clients from that. But my inner calling was just saying, JP, you need to step out more on your own. Leave this metaphoric family's home. You got to go find yourself more. So when I was resigning from the institute, I needed to get other streams of clients into my business. So I thought, well, why don't I start a YouTube channel, Sincere Life Advice, Health and Healing Videos. So that was my intention, starting YouTube. And I didn't have any kind of model of here's how to get successful on YouTube. It was just I committed to making at least one video every 2 weeks and being consistent with it, no matter how many people or how few people were watching the video. So I guess consistency was the only model I had.
And then now
it leads to All Things, or, I mean, are you still doing that consulting you were doing?
The past year and a half, my client consulting has been gradually, you know, from 5 or 6 days a week to 4 days a week, then to 3 days a week. And then in January, I officially jumped off the cliff of that familiarity, that comfort zone, letting a really great thing go, because that's what my heart was calling me to do. I find it so easy to let go of crappy things, but to actually move past something that's amazing, that's a tough call to listen to. It took me a while, so yeah, I've moved beyond the client practice.
Have you ever been a waiter?
I have not.
Because he mentioned that in there. You're possibly a waiter.
Oh, yeah. So I guess I'm in denial of the fact that I've been a waiter. So there's some pain around that I'll look at.
Yeah.
I feel like when I'm clicked into something meaningful, it amuses me. And I find I'm in my purest creative space when I am ignoring my audience. So when I'm in a creative space, you know, I really don't give a crap what other people will think. And more importantly, I don't give a crap what I think. Like, creativity, I don't think, is just thought of. My inner critic will always try to get me with its negative thinking. So really, the lack of laughter from YouTube, not a problem. The challenge, though, my ex-girlfriend, when I started doing the comedy videos, she would be behind the camera. She was a videographer, still is, not my girlfriend anymore. She did not think I'm funny. So she'd be behind the camera, and I'm like delivering these lines. I'm like, yeah, that's a home run. And she's just staring at me with this scowl. Half the time she'd be looking at her phone while I'm doing my video work. So that would start to quite like, wow, is this really crappy? But I cut her out of my life because she is crappy. Thank you very much. Thank you. My one word opinion would be no. There's not too much of that. There is too much of that to accidentally get, though. You know, there. When YouTube started, there were a lot of talentless people that got big followings simply because they were the first one to arrive in the new territory and say, this is my land. But I think there's a fact of life that says, if you are good and you're willing to let your goodness, your gifts shine consistently, the world can't help but notice you. I don't know, some comedian, it might be Steve Martin, but someone's biography or autobiography is, be so good, they can't ignore you.
Yeah, Steve Martin.
Is it? Yeah, so to me, that is really brilliant. So I do not buy into the cop-out that some people have. That says, well, there's tens of millions of creators on YouTube, so I'll never get noticed. And what I really hear people say when they're speaking that cop-out is they're afraid to try. You know, they're avoiding rejection by rejecting the world before the world has a chance to reject them. So that's not something I buy into.
Yeah, that's good. Here's what I'd like to do for timing purposes, because JP will be here all day tomorrow. Plus, he will be speaking at this year's annual event. Or if you would, he'll be roaming, lurking. There could be numerous things he's doing there, but he'll be there. His book is How to Be Ultra-Spiritual, 12 and a Half Steps to Spiritual Superiority. And the table of contents, because it's easier for me to read than to just do anything other than read. So there's the introduction to the introduction, the actual introduction, Ultra-Spirituality Crossing the Event Horizon, Chapter 1, Competitive Spirituality, Chapter 2, Inconveniently Human, Feelings Buried Alive Help You Thrive. Chapter 3, Dreaming Up Your Awakening. Chapter 4 is Rigidly Yogic, Increasing Your Flow. Chapter 5, Veganism, Satiating Spiritual Hunger. Chapter 6, Your Guru, Following Your Followee. Chapter 7, Mindfulness-ness.
Mindfulness-ness. Well said. We invented that word for the book.
Yeah. Chapter 8, Merciless Meditation. Chapter 9, Critically Non-Judgmental. Chapter 10, Religiously Unreligious. Chapter 11, Plant Medicine Compulsions. Chapter 12, Spiritual Testing Grounds. Chapter 12 and a half, Convincing Spirituality. So, this is the book. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like, if you have some time, read the introduction to the introduction tonight and any other parts, or just cancel all plans, including eating, and just spend the rest of the evening reading this. What I'd love to do is help him get more of his work out into the world. And because we have so many smart marketers here and so many people that have sold collectively millions of books in this group, I'd love to have you talk with him. And if you'd like to share this with your audience, then do it. Because like one of my objectives and goals is I love what this guy's doing and I think it's awesome and I think it brings joy to people's lives. And I also want to integrate it into the stuff that I'm doing with the addiction platform. And so I'd love to have you give your suggestions and recommendations?
To me, there's a lot of inner fulfillment when I go into deep wells of creativity. So that's my selfish agenda. And then there's three primary deeper messages that I intend for the book to deliver to people. So getting people to pay attention to those messages. In brevity, the messages are, let go of that which served you, that no longer serves you. The other is, step deeper into being your true self. The third message is, look for happiness where it is, not where it isn't. I think oftentimes the pursuit of happiness takes us in the opposite direction of actual happiness. So those are some messages that are near and dear to my heart that are important to deliver to people.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Genius Network. If you would like access to the full episode, the special resources, and show notes for this episode, please visit geniusnetwork.com/33. That's geniusnetwork.com/33. If you'd like to learn more about the Genius Network annual event, please visit geniusnetworkevents.com. That's geniusnetworkevents.com. And don't miss out on more insights, strategies, and wisdom like this on Genius Network. Subscribe to Genius Network today by visiting geniusnetwork.com/subscribe. That's geniusnetwork.com/subscribe.